All right, Stephen A. So here's the facts. The Cowboys get blown out on Thanksgiving Day, 41-16, by Washington, of all teams. They now fall to 3-8. What is Jerry Jones to do about Mike McCarthy and his coaching?
Well, Jerry Jones needs to replace him. It doesn't have to be this second, even though that wouldn't bother me either. It's hard for me to say this because I take no enjoyment out of it, and I think that Mike McCarthy is a guy that's qualified more so than a lot of coaches in the NFL to be a head coach, just not of this particular football team. When you have a situation where Jerry Jones is encouraging you to keep the offensive coordinator, who hasn't been bad, but some of the decisions have been questionable, even last year when Ezekiel Elliott wasn't getting the ball and Amari Cooper was taking out of key plays in the game and he's on the sideline, et cetera, et cetera. That's problematic. But I recall yesterday, Ezekiel Elliott asked out of a play. It was like third or fourth in inches, and he asked out of a play. There was another sequence where they had a fourth down scenario, and Mike McCarthy calls a pass play instead of a running play. I thought Tony Pollard could run the football, utilize him. That didn't happen. We see Gallup and Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb. CeeDee Lamb dropping the pass. That's not the coaching. That's on CeeDee Lamb. We get all of that. But that fake punt is on the coaches. The fourth and inches call when you elect to pass instead of run is on the coaches. When you look at stuff like that that's transpiring and you combine that with guys calling out the coaches earlier on in the season, him clearly not ingratiating himself. And listen, I'm not going to even go here because I'm going to be nice about it. But as a black dude, with you reportedly bringing in watermelons to crush them just a week ago to give an indication of how a defense should play, and that's your methodology in order to encourage brothers to show up and play with a bit more fervor and energy for you, that's a huge question mark, but I won't go there today. I'm going to be nice. In the end, what it comes down to is that you look at Mike McCarthy. And what we keep ignoring is that the NFL is not just about X's and O's, because the coaches are bright enough to know what the others are doing. It's about galvanizing the troops and making sure that they exhaust every means and measure to maximize whatever potential they have. It's called being a leader of men. And I don't see that from Mike McCarthy. And that, to me, is what the Dallas Cowboys are in desperate need of. And to act like everything falls apart. Because from a leadership perspective, Max, just because Dak Prescott isn't there is a bit bothersome to me. I don't buy that. I think some of that ownership should be on the coach. And if this man is not the right guy for the job, move on.
They were 8-8 with Dak Prescott last year and more of their offense. They were 8-8 with Dak Prescott last year and more of their offensive line, and they were losing with Dak Prescott early in the season, right? I mean, I'll say this. I wouldn't have hired Mike McCarthy. I thought it was a bad hire. But just like I said, when it came to benching Carson Wentz, they needed to do it 3 weeks ago, hold him accountable. At this point, what difference does it make? I think it's already a lost cause. The more I think about it, so what? Let's say he lets Mike McCarthy go. You think Jerry Jones is going to hire the right coach this time? Or is he going to hire someone else who, once again, won't take headlines away from Jerry Jones, attention away from Jerry Jones in the event that they do win? Meaning he will limit the pool of coaches he will choose from. And he would probably limit it to the less effective coaches, not to the young, charismatic coaches who might get, or even the more established coaches who might get credit for winning. So what difference does it really make? And let me say something else. Yesterday, he made a lot of questionable, he had showed poor judgment, obviously, from your own 24 on fourth down. Like, what are you doing? It's a trick play. Okay, fine. You have your $90 million running back. You're on fourth and one. You give him the ball, maybe. Try a quarterback sneak at times instead of a passing play. Didn't with CeeDee Lamb. Didn't make any sense, right? Like, a bunch of things didn't make sense. However, that's bad judgment. It's a bad day. It's a short week. It's Thanksgiving. All coaches tried trick plays yesterday. Some of them worked. Some of them didn't. He showed the worst judgment. Stephen A., I think there's something more important, though, and this is the reason I won't say let him go right now. I agreed with you about a month ago, but then I saw something happen. They came ready to play against the Eagles. They scored on the first possession. They lost the game because they weren't really good yet, and they're still not that good. They gave the Steelers a very tough game. I thought, that team is starting to look like a well-coached team to me, right? And then they beat the Vikings. The Vikings were on a streak. Like, the Vikings had just cleaned out the NFC North. They beat every team in the NFC North. The NFC North in consecutive games, that includes the Packers and that Bears defense, right? That's the team the Cowboys beat. So the fact that he shows poor judgment when he's kind of desperate, don't forget, both tackles went out early. And Zach Martin shouldn't even be a tackle. He's a tackle because Tyron Smith and Lyle Collins are both lost for the season. And then you lose, what's his name, Cameron Irving, and who was, you know, from the that high draft pick from the Browns from like 5 years ago, right? And Zach Martin, who's actually very good, but playing out of position. They have no offensive line. So on a day where a lot of guys try trick plays because it's a short week, it's Thanksgiving, when he knows he's outgunned, he understands all that, and he knows now I don't even have my backup offensive line. It's bad judgment. But I've seen more important things than bad judgment in terms of play calling. I saw a coach who started to get his team motivated to play. So I'm willing to look a little more this season to see what happens before I say get rid of the guy.
That's fine. That's fair, Max Kellerman, and I can't knock you for that. What I would say in response to that is then we don't really, really need to rave that much about Mike Tomlin, do we? Mike Tomlin hasn't had a losing season. Mike Tomlin went 8-8 with a third-string quarterback, and we raved and raved and raved about that. Now, obviously, we know how excellent he is, how exceptional he is, and we know it was absolutely ludicrous for people alluding to him being on a hot seat a couple of years ago. But last year, he played with third and fourth-string quarterbacks. What you're telling me about Mike McCarthy is that things have to be ideal, and what I'm saying to you is that we've seen guys be given chances and have performed their duties with less than ideal circumstances. So if I was seeing that from Mike McCarthy, I would feel different too. That's not what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a guy that's dependent on things being ideal in order for him to shine. And that should not be the requirement in order to be a head coach in the National
Football
League. Well,
Stephen A., real quick, you don't have to be Mike Tomlin to be a good coach. Right, or to have a job as a coach. Mike Tomlin is a future Hall of Fame coach. Mike Tomlin is an all-time great coach. So, like, you know, I praised Ron Rivera. He ain't Mike Tomlin, but he's a good coach, right? And Mike McCarthy at this moment ain't Ron Rivera either, but maybe he's good enough to coach the Cowboys. I want to see the rest of this year.
Yeah, I don't think they'll do it, especially with Dak Prescott getting injured, but we shall see.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Meanwhile, Nick Saban has tested positive for COVID-19 the other day. Will not coach tomorrow when number one Alabama hosts number 22 Auburn in the Iron Bowl. ESPN's Football Power Index still gives Bama a 92% chance to win. On that note, we bring in our friend, Tim Tebow. Tim, I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. And since I'm the nice one on the show and the guys won't do it, I want you to know we are grateful for our Fridays with Tim. So we're going to talk a little college football.
Well,
I hope you enjoyed yourself with your family.
Too.
Thank you.
It was awesome Thanksgiving. I hope you guys had the same. I know Stephen A's so excited just because the Cowboys lost, so it was a good Thanksgiving for him just for that.
Yeah, he's a hater.
You know absolutely
him well.
True.
You got it. Look at that face. Tim, another thing that Stephen A. loves, you know, is Alabama. So tell me this. Who's the biggest threat to Alabama at this point?
I think it's Clemson. You know, everybody wants to knock Clemson. Oh, you go on the road and you lose in overtime against a really good Notre Dame team with the backup quarterback. Like, no, we need to understand this Clemson team is still really, really good. You know, if they play on a neutral field, that game right now is probably a toss-up. That's how good Clemson is when they're healthy, when they're ready to go. I think Alabama should be one, but I think people should also understand that when you're missing one of the top prospects in the last 10 years at the quarterback position, it makes a difference. I'm not trying to knock DJ, but what I'm saying is Trevor, in his third year when they've been to back-to-back championships, it's a different team when Trevor Lawrence is on the field. We still need to put respect around Trevor and Clemson because they earned it and they deserve it.
What about Ohio State? And I asked that question essentially in two parts. I mean, I think that they could potentially be a more lethal team than Clemson, number one. And I think, number two, a legitimate argument could be made that Justin Fields is better than Trevor Lawrence. Talk to me about Ohio State for a second.
Yeah, I think both of those arguments are real arguments. I think Ohio State is a very talented team. I think the one difference between this Ohio State team and the Ohio States of last year and in the past where they were great, I don't see their defensive line dominating games. I don't see their defensive line getting to the quarterback like they have in the past, especially with Chase Young. Where is that dude that's going to step out? In the past, they've had the Bosa brothers. They've had Chase Young. They've had dominating defensive line. I don't believe they have that this year. They're still really good. But offense, Justin Fields, he is maybe the best overall player in college football because of his ability to run and throw. And they got so many weapons out wide. But my question, Mark, is you just gave up too many yards over and over and over again for me to question and say, what's missing here? Why aren't you getting to the quarterback, right? I know Indiana's got a talented offense, but there's just a little bit of question mark. I still think they're a top four team. They could win the championship. They can get it figured out. But I just have a few more question marks on Ohio State right now, especially defensively, to say I think they're better than Alabama or Clemson.
What gives with the lack of respect for Clemson? Because I'm with you, Tim. This team, like, I'll believe that they're not the best when I see Alabama beat them in the national championship game, because the last time they linked up, it wasn't close, right? Like, they barely lose to Notre Dame in overtime on the road without Trevor Lawrence. I have little doubt they win that by multiple scores if Trevor Lawrence is there. They never lose at home. They haven't lost at home until Pittsburgh, right? Since Pittsburgh, and they're going to avenge that coming right up. Why is it that Alabama got the benefit of the doubt for so many years? And it seems to me Clemson is now where Alabama was, but they don't get the benefit of the doubt.
Well, I still think there's a lot of respect for Clemson. I think that's why they're ranked third. You know, I think people still believe they're good, but this is the other interesting thing about the College Football Playoff Committee. If you really believe they're the top four teams, and with Trevor Lawrence, they would have beaten Notre Dame in a neutral site, then if you really believe that, and we're supposed to pick the four best teams, do you put them second? Or do you do more deserving? Because I also believe head-to-head's got to matter, and then Notre Dame rises up. But I still believe there's a lot of respect for Clemson. But I'm intrigued to see what happens when Clemson hits their stride, because they haven't hit it yet. But when they do, Clemson is going to be so dangerous. You have two of the top players in Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne. And by the way, the rest of the positions are stacked with five-star talent. So when they hit their stride, they're going to be ready to play with anybody.
I know that Trevor Lawrence didn't play against Notre Dame, and that to me is the reason, and to most of us with sense, that's the reason Clemson lost this game to Notre Dame. And I do understand that it went into extra sessions, and I get all of that. But Tim Tebow, Trevor Lawrence not playing, how does that explain the defense giving up 47 points? I'm talking about Clemson.
Well, you also got to understand part of, you know, a few of the scores is overtime, right? And this is college football today, 2020, not college football 2005. It's a different game. The best defenses are still giving up a lot of points. probably the best defense in college football is Georgia. And Georgia got mopped by Florida, giving up a bunch of points. Right now, football is set up with targeting, with the way they're calling fouls, with the no huddle, with the schemes. It's set up for more points. So we also have to adjust our mind to say, you know what? We're not going to look at everything as a 17-14 game. It's different. Look at the championships we've been seeing the last few years when Clemson has matched up with Alabama. Those were good defenses, but there was a lot of points being scored. And so I still think we got to understand what defense looks like in 2020 and balance that with kind of what we have in our mind from the past. Teams are going to give up a little bit more.
I believe
football is evolving and it's more of an offensive game.
I believe Clemson leads the league in, it leads college football in sacks and tackles for losses, if I'm not mistaken.
All right. We'll leave it there. Timothy,
and
always good to see you, Tim. Appreciate you. Yep. Go ahead.
Appreciate you guys. You're awesome. I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. Always great being with you guys. Grateful for y'all.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Shopping for Mother's Day is always a challenge because you wait until the last minute. But Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day, whether you're shopping for your sister's first Mother's Day or your fashionista mom who loves to make a statement. Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate them both. You can shop by price, anywhere from $25 and under to $100 and under. You can also sort by categories like fragrance, handbags, and more. Or gift lists, like for the mom who has everything. Pre-wrapped gifts or gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, Samsung smart TVs. So what are you waiting for? Mother's Day's May 12th, and it'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder. Thanks so much for listening to the pod and have a fabulous day. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tomorrow night, Staples Center in L.A., 54-year-old Mike Tyson returns to the ring for the first time in 14 years in an exhibition versus Roy Jones Jr. Jones, who's 49, has stayed active last fighting in 2018 when he won a 10-round decision. Stephen A., are you excited or are you concerned about this fight?
Well, obviously, I'm excited, but it's for all the wrong reasons. I mean, obviously, it's a fight and we get that and I love my boxing. Max Kellerman, I'm very, very worried. You know that I know Roy Jones Jr. You know I got a lot of love for him on a personal level. I'm scared. I'm very, very scared for him. And I'm not talking about just a knockout loss. I'm talking about the damage he will incur by getting knocked out. This is a Roy Jones Jr. Mike Tyson, he's been knocked out 5 times in his career as well, but we know the last two. He basically retired on the seat of his pants because he was fatigued and old and all of this other stuff to McBride. We all know who Tyson is and who he was, and the last legitimate knockout was really to Lennox Lewis, and you know he was beyond his prime at that particular moment in time. Roy Jones Jr. is an entirely different scenario. Like you pointed out, Max, since he lost weight, went up to heavyweight to fight John Ruiz, came back, won a decision against Tarver, and then in their rematch got knocked out by Tarver. Never been the same since.
Never the
same. Ugliest knockout was Glenn Johnson right after that. And then, you know what? He got knocked out twice by no names in Moscow. I mean, it didn't all seem there. And those dudes don't hit like Mike Tyson. Max Kellerman, I'm scared Roy Jones is going to die. That's how scared I am that he's going to get hit with the wrong kind of punch. And you know Tyson, it ain't just one punch. It's usually a combination. I'm not trying to be hyperbolic here. I'm just scared that he's going to get hit wrong and he's going to go down. I saw him how he looked after Glenn Johnson. I saw him after he looked at some of these knockouts. I don't like this for Roy Jones. I'm scared to death for my brother. I don't like the fact that he's fighting this at all. I'm totally against this. I don't even think this should be sanctioned. Not that this is. I mean, you know what I'm saying. Well, I don't even like it.
I think it's important that you said that. It's important that someone in the mainstream media brings up it's dangerous, especially for Roy, as you said, when he came back down from heavyweight to light heavy, he was never the same. But I just want to make something clear to everybody out there. Mike Tyson is one of the biggest sports stars in the history of the planet Earth. But Roy Jones is a better pound-for-pound fighter. Roy Jones, at his very best, made me wonder, is he better than Sugar Ray Robinson? Right? He's the best I've ever seen. He was way better than Mayweather when they were both in their primes. No one thought Mayweather was as good as Roy. And in fact, when Roy went up to heavyweight, Stephen A., you know, after he beat Ruiz, he opened as a 2-1 favorite to beat Mike Tyson? But you're right, he's been knocked out brutally since then. And I love the man. I worked with him for years, side by side. We used to watch prelim fights leading up to the HBO telecast, and I learned so much just trying to absorb his boxing knowledge because he's brilliant. And I don't want to see him get hurt either. And here's the real rub, and this is one of the ways they sell this exhibition, headgear, two-minute eight rounds. The reason I think it's going to sell is precisely because of the danger you identify, Stephen A. You see, it's an exhibition, right, technically? But if it was Muhammad Ali giving an exhibition, you could imagine him clowning, putting on a show, not really trying to hurt the other guy, not trying to get hurt himself. And at the end, people go home happy or whatever, entertained in some way, and no one got hurt. That's not Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson doesn't know how to do that. Mike Tyson knows one thing. Ding, ding, round one. And as he said after he knocked out Jesse Ferguson with the uppercut, he's trying to push your nose bone into your brain. Mike Tyson is in the hurt business, and he's a naturally much larger man than Roy Jones. For that reason, I do think there is real danger here, and I think that that's one of the reasons it's going to sell, and it's a good thing that you brought it up, because as I said, I also feel that, and I love the man. I love Roy, and let me say one other thing. Had Roy stayed at heavyweight, I think those 2-1 odds to beat Mike Tyson back then were justified.
Well, I'm not going to go that far because I just have this innate belief that when you move up that considerably in weight, once you get hit by a legitimate heavyweight like that, all of that stuff goes out the window. Yes, Roy Jones better pound for pound, but that don't have anything to do when he takes one of those punches. And Mike Tyson, first of all, you don't want Mike Tyson to hit you in the body, let alone the head. And we understand what we have seen from Roy. I literally was begging. I came on national TV. I called some of his boys. I begged, don't do this. Don't fight this. I am scared as hell for Roy Jones. And I hope that if he gets hurt, you know what? Just go down. Just go down, bro, and stay down until the fight's over. It's an exhibition. Don't do this. Don't go in there and try to slug with Tyson, because you're going to run all eight rounds. Do whatever you got to do to stay the hell away from him. And if he hurt you, just go the hell down, because I am scared for
one
the
thing
residual
that might make you feel a little better, Stephen A.
that will happen to Roy Jones Jr. I'm scared as hell.
One thing that might make you feel a little better, and it's the reason you usually hear about tragedies in lighter weight divisions, it's usually not one punch that does it afterward, right? When you hear about the really bad stuff, it's usually an accumulation of punches. And it's hard to imagine if Tyson wins, it's going to be from an accumulation of punches because he hits so hard. If he wins or if he knocks Roy out, it's likely to be from one punch, which actually mitigates the damage after the fight.
Listen,
after
I can't wait to watch. Listen,
Roy
guys,
Jones,
I wish we could be there.
A simple combo is all that it will take, Max. A simple combo is all that it will take
Bye
to do
everyone.
That damage.
Bye, everyone. Have a safe weekend. We'll see you Monday.
Scared
guys, we'll
hell.
Talk about it Monday. Looking forward to it. Bye.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.